Mind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast hosted by Peyton Heben.
Of Behind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm your host, Peyton Heben. This is episode number 20. Today we are joined by a special guest who I've had the opportunity to know for a couple years now. He's the owner of Rise Music Group. He's a very successful artist manager. Please welcome Tanner Lewis.
Appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fun to be on this side of the microphone for a change.
Yeah. Yeah, so you do a music business podcast.
Yeah, man, I started it in probably 2021. I haven't been as consistent as I need to be, but it's always like January 1st. It's always like, I'm going to do it this year, yeah. Right?
So when I started this, or I came to Nick Tressler at Raised Rowdy, I came with him to the idea, or actually I came to him and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to start a music business podcast. Like, what kind of equipment do I need?
Yeah.
And he was like, instead of just buying your own equipment, why don't you just like, shoot it out of our studio and we'll make it a Raised Rowdy one.
Heck yeah.
That was probably in October of 2022.
Cool.
And it took a full year just to launch my podcast.
Yeah, man.
And now here we are, but 20 episodes in and it's extremely hard to be consistent.
What's your cadence?
Every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Cool. So same goals. Weekly, I think, is the move. What I've learned about myself is I'll prioritize my artist over my project for the podcast. So I would work on artist stuff and neglect booking my own podcast. So I finally just hired an employee for Rise and I was like, you're going to book my podcast interviews and you're going to put them on my calendar and then I'm going to have to do them.
Yeah. Which is awesome. I wish I had that because I'm at, obviously, you know, I'm at Riverhouse.
Yeah.
When I first started the podcast and had my first guest, I was work from home, part-time employee there doing just my own artist management stuff. So I could do it at 10 a.m., I could do it at noon, I could do it at 7 p.m., whenever I wanted.
Yeah.
And then they promoted me to full-time in office, and it was just like pure chaos from there.
Yeah. And then you're like having to force people to drive through 5 p.m. traffic to get here.
Yeah. So thanks for doing that, because I just sat through 45 minutes of traffic too.
100%, man. Yeah. It actually wasn't as bad as I expected it to be. But when I started, I had one of my artists. We've got a car that we keep up here, and I kind of let my artist like take it around. So he had a write today, and I'm calling him at like 3:30 in the afternoon and be like, hey, that 11 a.m. write should be over by now. I need my car back. And he's like, it's almost done, man. We're getting the track right now. So I had to wait for him to get back to the condo before I could head this way. But made it 5 minutes late. Not too bad.
Do you stay downtown?
Yeah, we've got a few Airbnb condos downtown. So I bounce back and forth in between here and Texas still. Mm-hmm. And so when we're in town, we'll stay at some of the Airbnb condos and then hop back out to Texas.
So let's get into your story a little bit and coming from the Texas scene. And so growing up, did you grow up in Texas?
Yeah, I grew up in Lexington, Texas, which nobody's ever heard of. Unless they're a big barbecue connoisseur in Texas. There's a place called Snow's Barbecue there that's pretty famous. But outside of that, 900 people, class of 53, and nobody ever drives through there.
What's the closest city?
It's right in between Austin and College Station.
Okay.
So just cattle country out there, you know. But as soon as I graduated, I moved to Austin. Started going to Texas State and San Marcos for business. At that point was kind of like putting myself through school by playing gigs myself, kind of a Texas country singer-songwriter scene and stuff like that, and very quickly realized that the performance side of it was not what drove me, but music was, right? So like I knew for sure that I was addicted to music. Still to this day, if you talk to my wife, my AirPods are in my ears 16 hours a day. And that's not an exaggeration. And I'm not sponsored by Apple, unfortunately. But, you know, it's just something that, like, has always been huge for me, but it wasn't the writing or the recording that was driving me, or even the being on stage. It was being around the music and influencing the music in a creative way, but much more on the business side. I've only owned businesses. I've never really worked for anybody for more than a few months. And so like building businesses was what I found myself drawn to, and artist management, what else are you doing but building these businesses for these artists?
What was the kind of music that you were growing up on?
Man, it started really in the Texas country scene, just because that's what, you know, small town country mm-hmm. kids did. You went to the local dance hall on the weekends and you listened to Randy Rogers and Josh Abbott, and that was kind of the scene. But it expanded rapidly. I mean, now I listen to trap rap as much as I listen to country. You know, I'm all over the place with musical influences. And that's definitely a goal of mine with Rise, is to not be a genre-specific management company, but to expand into all genres one day.
100%. Which when I first started, I was just straight country. I was like, I don't want to do anything that's not in country. And then it kind of, the lines started to blur a little bit, especially in today's country market.
Yeah.
Where there's so much like country rock, country rap. There's really no like just straight country anymore.
Right.
So I think I'm a huge fan of kind of just like branching out in the genre.
Yeah, man. And it's so hard for me in artist management to have anything remotely in the same lane. You know, like right now my roster is country leaning, mm-hmm. but none of them are in the same realm of country as the next one.
Right.
And when in an artist management position and you're really going to bat for this person, like how are you supposed to represent this guy and then another guy that sounds just like him and be mm-hmm. just as passionate about it, and calling your friends and telling them how fantastic this guy is if he's no different than your other artists?
Right. You know, and if you're having to help book, then you're trying to book the same venues and it gets tough because right. they're competing with each other.
Yeah, 100%.
So I get that entirely. So did you graduate from Texas State?
Yeah, I did. Cool. I graduated from Texas State with a marketing degree.
Awesome.
Immediately moved to Nashville days after graduating.
What was the year on this?
This was 2015. And got me a Fortune 500 sales job just to get myself up here. Stuck with that for about 6 months. And honestly, it was the only time that I've ever worked a corporate job in my whole life. But it was the most beneficial 6 months of my life. Not because of the job I was doing, but because of how it taught me to work. Mm-hmm. I credit the time in the sales training within that company to the amount of dedication and follow through that I have now, and the amount of like hours I'm willing to put in now. You know, I was switching from being this college kid musician sleeping till 3 p.m. to this Fortune 500 job where I was waking up at 5 a.m. to work out, to go to the office, to make 70 calls a day, to go out and do sales runs, then come back to the office, make 70 more calls, and go home and go to sleep. And that 6 months really, like, it was almost like a little boot camp mm-hmm. for the way I operate today. So I was there for a little bit, 6 months into that job. While I was benefiting in those ways, I was absolutely miserable in not being in the music industry. And I had got my girlfriend at the time to move up here with me from Texas, and we got us a nice apartment in the Gulch and stuff like that. And I remember coming home to her one day and I was like, I don't really know what to tell you, but I'm gonna quit this job. And she probably thought I was crazy and was like, what do you mean you're gonna quit? We got this expensive rent, we've moved from Texas to Nashville for this job. I was like, I don't know, I'm gonna figure it out, but I'm gonna get back in the music industry, I'm gonna quit. So that's kind of what happened. Just ended up finding my way back into the music industry, this time 100% on the business side, which is where I belong.
I think that's a thing that happens fairly often where people move to Nashville with the hopes of being in the music industry, but when they move here, there's not, I mean, there are opportunities, but they don't pay super well, those entry jobs.
Sure.
So, and if you're wanting to do the artist management thing independently, you're going to have another job most of the time.
Yeah.
Starting out. So people come here and they get those big desk jobs, and then it takes over their life to the point where they're not able to go do the other thing.
Right.
In the music. And then it just kind of overwhelms them, and that's their life. Music never works out, and they move home or whatever. So it's good to see a success story. But you did move back to Texas. So what's the story on deciding to leave Nashville? And
yeah. So, I mean, right now, last month, I spent 20 days here. Mm-hmm. So I say I moved back to Texas. And as far as my homestead tax is concerned and the United States of America Census Bureau, Texas is home. But I find myself spending more and more time here each month. Family was core reason for that move. My wife's family's from Houston. Mine's all around the Austin area. And so I think at that point we were both young, straight out of college, moved up here, probably got a little homesick. And at that point, you know, like straight out of college, we couldn't afford to fly home and see family every time we wanted to go hang out with them for the weekend and stuff like that. So we moved back. And then now I find myself flying up here almost twice a week sometimes. I'm like, should just move back to Nashville and then fly home for the weekend.
Yeah. But I will say, like, even though you did move back to Texas, it wasn't like, I mean, if you lived in like Oregon or something and you moved back to Oregon, I mean, Texas is a great place to be for the music business.
100%. Yeah. So,
I mean, there is a huge, especially now, the market of Texas country music really is a lot bigger and people really understand.
Yeah, and I've still got one artist that is based in Texas. He's up here every other week as well. But it's a really cool place. I love Austin. I think I'll always live in Austin or Nashville. Southwest Airlines is clutch, coming in with those cheap flights to Nashville direct. Mm-hmm. And it makes it super easy to go back and forth. But I do think, you know, my hope when I moved back, and my, I guess, bargaining chip with my wife now was, okay, we can move back, but we're going to keep a place here, and I'm going to have to travel a lot more than if we were staying home base here. And so my hope always has been that most people in Nashville maybe don't see me weekly, but see me often enough to not know if I live here or not. You know, I don't want it to ever be that the presence here has waned just because we are going back and forth. And I think I've done a pretty decent job of staying pretty plugged in this town while in the interim, and maybe shifting back this way, and maybe we'll be back here full time soon.
Well, I've seen you out a lot. There's been a lot of times over the past couple months where I've just seen you out at random things where you have no artist playing.
Right.
It's you're just there.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is he doing here?
Hanging out. That's the goal, man. Yeah. See and be seen.
So when you were in Nashville before you ended up moving back in the earlier days of your music career, what kind of things were you doing to try and stay in the business? I know you said artist management, but
yeah, I mean, I think artist management has always been what drove me. Because like I said, I did come from a creative background, but not in the same way as artists are. But it was never a avenue for me to be a booking agent or certain other avenues that you could go into in this business. I do genuinely love building the business as a whole. And so I love how many different sectors that management gives you the opportunity to touch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm on the phone with so-and-so's booking agent, and then having a call with producers to go over songs and pick songs that we're doing, or setting up a co-write with this writer that I think could be a good fit. And I think that's where some of my creative itches get taken care of, is that if I set up my artist with a writer that they've never met, but I feel like could be a good fit, and then we end up cutting that song, like that's enough influence in the creativity for me to get that fill,
right?
You know, And then outside of that, I'm cool on my MacBook. I don't need creative input.
When was Rise born?
So I worked for a management company up here from 2015 to 2017. In 2018, that company shut down, and I called all of my management clients at the time.
Are you allowed to say any of them?
None of them are clients anymore, so I won't. Okay. But I called all of them at the time, and I said, the company's shutting down that I work for. I'd still love to be your manager if you'd like to have me. I'll figure out a name for this thing, and we'll keep rocking and rolling. And thankfully, all of them said, yes, you're our dude. Let's keep rolling. Walked around the block with my dogs a few times and came up with the Rise Music Group and called them all and said, new company's called Rise. Let's roll. So 2018, February.
Very nice. Yeah, I remember, I forget the first time I came across it. I think it maybe was just when I was working with Hayden on booking him that first time, I think.
Yeah.
But you guys were doing, it wasn't just like management, right? There was more like marketing to it.
Yeah. So I co-owned a marketing company during COVID. Like I said, I like building businesses. Mm-hmm. So
that was, I knew there was like another sector to what you were doing.
Yeah. So that company was called Hilo Digital.
Yeah, that's right.
I co-owned it with another manager in town, you know, Clay Newman.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were working that company. Essentially, that company was born out of necessity during COVID. You know, I had all these artists that were under my management wing, but were sitting at home during COVID and trying to figure out, like, how do we eat? How do we get rid of the merch that's in the trailer just rotting and stuff like that? And so I started figuring out ways for artists to make money online during COVID as a necessity. And that kind of snowballed into, maybe this can generate revenue even after COVID. And so we opened up a digital marketing company for a little while, had some successes with kind of generating YouTube revenue and stuff for some artists, building streams. You know, Hayden's a great case study of how we took social media and what he was able to do from home and turned it into a viable career for him. And that was everything from, you know, lives to YouTubes to putting out content to moving the merch and everything like that. Since then, the management stuff has gotten much busier, as you know, with, mm-hmm. with Hayden and Dave and Lane. And we've shut down the Hilo Digital company to focus 100% on management.
Right.
But it was a really cool, it was fun to get more into that side of things and use my marketing degree a little bit. And it was great to be able to help some of these artists through a really tough time, and made some cool relationships on the side. Dave Finley, who's one of my management artists, mm-hmm. he was a client for the digital marketing company.
Gotcha.
And we just formed such a good working relationship that when I shut that down, I said, let's just call this management and keep rolling.
Yeah. So you have Hayden Kaufman, Dave Finley, and Lane Smith.
Lane Smith, and I guess this will be the announcement. I just signed a artist out of Arkansas. They're called Hayfield.
Oh, hell yeah.
They're super sick. Like punk rock country.
Yeah.
Super new lane. They've got an EP dropping this Friday. This episode probably won't be out by then. So
I think I'm going to release it next week.
Yeah. So last Friday. So it's out now. And they're going to be cool, man. Yeah, they're super fresh. But so it'll be those four.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, Clay Newman was the one that told me about them. He's like, you need to check out this band out of Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
So I checked them out. And that's sweet that you're good. Working with them.
100%.
But to talk about Hayden Kaufman for a second. That's the craziest shit I've ever seen in somebody's career. Seriously.
A growth curve's good, right?
Yes. It's like nonstop, just up, 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 up. So I think I met him, might have been 2018. When did you guys start working together? I think I met him before you guys did, but
it was probably late 2018.
Okay. I think I met him first when he was working with Chapin.
Yes. So yeah. When I met Hayden, it was weeks before him and Chapin stopped working together.
Okay.
So right gotcha. Around that same time frame.
Cool. So yeah, I was at Georgia Southern. I remember I saw him on social media. And I was a huge fan, and I knew he had been playing Fort Myers, which was my hometown. He had been doing that with Chapin and Bryce Malden and them. And so I just kind of followed what he was doing. We kind of just DM'd back and forth. And then to see, like, the next song was slightly bigger than the one before. And then it was just constant bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think he put out his first album or EP or something. And just to see the growth from when I first met him to where he is now.
Yeah.
And then obviously I just went and saw him play that Knoxville show.
Right.
Insane.
Yeah. Man, it was Knoxville actually the first time I ever saw him and saw the way fans interact with him. I had had Hayden open up for a few of my artists in Texas, and of course, you know, like he was just down there opening, getting his foot in the door, and people didn't necessarily know who he was in Texas at that time. And the show was good. But it wasn't till the first time I saw him play the Joe in Knoxville where I was like, there's something happening here. You know, like you saw the fanatical looks on the fans' faces and them just screaming at the top of their lungs every word back to the stage. And that was 4 years ago at this point. And it's only gotten better since then, but it's a fun crowd.
Yeah, I'm such a fan of him and everything he's done. And to see the growth, I mean, it couldn't happen to a better person. Everybody in that camp is just like, it's awesome to see.
Yeah, man, it's a team effort, but Hayden truly is one of the most dedicated artists I've ever worked with. You know, he's not the guy who's going to wait for the phone to ring. Mm-hmm. He's the one that's going to call me 5 times a day with ideas and be like, hey, can we do this? Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. You know, and he's truly addicted in the best way to this music career, and he's going to make it work, you know, and he just moves really fast because of that.
Yeah. And he met his match with Lexi.
Absolutely.
She's on it,
man. She's fantastic.
Doing everything.
Yeah.
I mean, to see her kind of when I booked him for Fort Fest the first year and second year, I mean, she's running the show over there on the road.
Yeah, man. She's been a huge help. You know, we kind of last year at some point officially made her tour manager. You know, she'd been out there doing it for a long time, running the merch and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But last year, you know, it just made sense to fully turn that over to her, and she's done great and learned a lot and making it much more smooth out there, running that operation. And I mean, it's a big operation. You know, he's traveling with 10 people most of the time, and he's got content person on the road with him full time, which has been a big help to the way he structured his business. Mm-hmm. You know, the content is a huge portion of what he does and what people look for from him. And it's an investment, you know, but truly we've seen it pay off.
Absolutely. And I will say, so the first year of the festival, when he came down to Fort Myers and played, he came with the Honda Pilot and a trailer.
Yep.
Second year, I mean, it was less than a year. So the first one was April 23rd, 2022, I think. And then the next one was April 1st, 2023. So that April 1st came with the bus and trailer.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how much difference a year. How many things can change in a year?
Yeah, man. And just seeing the slow, steady gains, but also the big ones, you know? And I think I've been fortunate enough to work with a few artists on my roster that have had what you'd call viral moments, I guess, and Better Off would definitely be one of those big gains. And I think you're always like chasing that moment once it happens, right? But that moment is huge. But if you look at all of the other song drops, like you're talking about, each song just grows by 50%. And when you compound all those 50%, it's a much bigger influx. And in my mind, results in a much more devoted fan base than that one viral pop.
Yeah. What are the biggest things that you other than the content, the high quality content, what are some of the biggest things that you focused on with Hayden specifically to get that just organic growth?
I think Hayden's brand is super consistent, both in the frequency he puts stuff out as well as how people view him. In my mind, Hayden is one of those artists that what you see online is who you get in person, and he's very authentic, and it's very clear what and who he is. I think you know him well enough to know that he's just a good dude that absolutely, you want yeah. to go grab a beer with and goof around with, and he's as goofy in person as he is online, and as approachable in person as he is online. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think you always get that. You know, I think when you look at his brand, like, you know that he is loved by the blue collar crowd. You know that he's a party when he's out drinking or not drinking, like he is the life of any room that he goes into. And so I think because he's so clear about who he is, fans resonate with that and come out to the show and are not disappointed when they find out that that person online is the same person on stage.
Yeah. So being an independent artist manager, what are some of the hardest things that you kind of had to overcome to really make it all work? Because you're kind of having to teach yourself things. You're not like me right now. I'm kind of like learning from people as I go. It's yeah. my first time being in an office working for somebody. So like when I still do 22 Entertainment, my management company. Mm-hmm. But like before I had nobody, no guidance, you know, so you've done the whole thing yourself this entire time building the business. So kind of what's been some learning curves for you, some things you've learned along the way?
Man, I think just being super open to learning from anybody, you know, I've definitely been blessed with just an open community of people in Nashville specifically, but even broader than that in Austin as well and stuff like that, of just people that have been open books. And I think you learn stuff along the way by absorbing, and you kind of take for granted that you know it. And then you look back 5 years and realize that you hadn't always known that,
mm-hmm.
you know. I was talking to a young music business professional the other day, and he asked if BMG, the publisher, was a label. And it took me back a minute, and I was like, there was a time that I didn't know if BMG was a publisher or a label, you know? And that's exactly where this kid is right now.
Yeah.
So like versus like be kind to those people. Right. And like teach, just like I was taught at some point. I can't ever remember when I learned that, but at some point along the way you soaked it up, you know?
Yeah.
And then I've also been pretty fortunate to work with artists who I started with most of them at the bottom, you know? So I really have built this roster. Dave is a little bit of an exception, but Hayden, when I started working with him, he didn't have any of the songs that are out now out then.
Mm-hmm.
So every single song that he's put out, I was a part of. Lane had 70,000 all-time streams when I signed him, and now he's 3 million or something like that. So I started at the bottom with him. Dave had already done some TV shows and stuff like that.
Remember him from The Voice.
Yeah, he'd been at it a minute. But I think because I had the opportunity to start at the beginning with some people and then also hop into some midway careers, every experience has been a learning curve. You know, like I did my first label meetings with these artists. I did my first publishing meetings with these artists. I set up first studios with these artists. You know, like we've kind of done it all together. And each time one of these artists progresses along their career, it's another learning opportunity for me. You know, we have not yet put on any worldwide stadium tours, but we will one day, and then I'll know how to do that.
Right.
You know,
I think for me, being also an independent artist manager, it's tough to handle sometimes all of the moving parts.
Yeah.
So you, like the artist that I manage, he has no, he had like a little label deal, but he doesn't anymore. So there's no label, there's no booking, there's no publisher. So it's kind of, I'm wearing every single hat you could possibly wear.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. You know, I'm the 100%. One doing the contracts. I'm the one trying to pitch songs, you know, just like, or get songs pitched. Like it's, there's a lot. I'm the one trying to book all the shows, and that's how he makes his money.
Right.
Because it's not coming from streaming.
Yeah.
So
I think early on, people were like, you know, like, how do you fill your day or whatever? I was like, man, if you're a manager and you got one artist, you can find something to do.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to run out of stuff to do. You probably can't do it all, but you're not going to run out.
But how did you kind of navigate doing all those things, especially since you never necessarily had the background in, say, booking? You know, how'd you figure out how to send those booking emails, the way to word it, what to include in it, or getting doing a release for a song, like you talk about, you're doing those Hayden releases,
right? I don't know the clear answer to all that, you know. I think some things that I've lived by is work really hard and do what you say you're going to do. And that's been very important to me. So I'm much more, I'm not going to tell you 20 things we're going to do. I'm going to tell you the 5 things I got done, you know, and I'd much rather get the work done first and then talk about it than make a bunch of empty promises. I think that's the one thing in this business that, has always been something that just gets to me, is over promising and under delivering.
Yeah, absolutely.
So follow through is a huge thing for me. And I think I'm just motivated, man. I work long hours. Thankfully my wife puts up with me thinking about this all the time, you know, whether it's at the dinner table or waking up at 5 a.m. to start sending emails on the computer or whatever it is. But you do work really hard, and you kind of just got to be smart about it all and figure it all out, you know. There are things that have to sit at the bottom of the to-do list and things that have to sit at the top of the to-do list. And I try to put my must-get-done stuff in between 5 a.m. and 9 a.m. because I know as soon as 9 a.m. starts, it's you're answering to other people's wants.
Right.
Right. 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. is my time when nobody's going to message me asking for stuff. So I'm going to get the stuff done that I know needs to be done. And then at 9 a.m. when people start waking up, I'll respond to their needs. But 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. is my time to do what I know needs to be done.
Yeah. Because sometimes it does feel like there's not enough hours in the day.
Definitely.
To get everything done that's required, especially when you have, you said four. That's four now, right? So yeah, four artists. I mean, one's a handful. But I mean, I'm building my roster and it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, thank God I have like people that are helping me. I know you are kind of building your staff too.
Absolutely.
Do you still have Cash?
Cash, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one I was saying was booking my podcast for me and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So actually he came to Rise, I think, thanks to you in some respects. I think we connected and decided he was going to stay in the corporate world. And then I think you recommended that he reach back out and he connected for a second time, and it worked out that second time.
Yeah. That's so interesting because I kid you not, 2, maybe 3 weeks, I worked with Ryan Waters' band for just a little bit. We were friends, and then they ended up getting a bigger opportunity in the management world and label side. But I was trying to help book some shows, and we had an opportunity in Texas. And we were looking for a little routing thing. So they sent me Cash. And they're like, oh, this guy, he's got some connections. So we were on a phone call, and then we kind of just nothing worked out. And then we kept in contact. And he's like, hey, man, do you know anybody down in Texas? I was like, oh, I know this one guy.
Yeah.
And I think I sent him your way then.
Yeah, man.
And then, then I saw him post about Rise that he started working. And I was like, oh, no shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glad that's working out.
He's motivated and learning quickly. So I hope he does well.
me and my girlfriend, we went to lunch with him not too long ago, when he was in town.
Very cool.
So
yeah, that was his first trip to Nashville. He came up here and hung out with us for a little bit and got to see the crew. I think that was Hayden's Whiskey Jam Week or something.
Yeah, that's
like
what
that.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a motivated dude.
100%. Yeah. And he's a great get out there and meet people.
Yep.
Dude, you know, I think there's different people who approach, opportunities differently. And I've always been kind of quiet, stand in the back of the room and let the work speak for itself, dude. But Cash is great about getting out there and shaking hands, man, and meeting people. He knows no stranger.
Absolutely. So what's your advice to people that are either coming out of high school that don't want to go to college, or they're coming out of college that want to move to Nashville or don't, and just be in the music world doing artist management, specifically independently?
Starting their own company?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it did do me well to come here and work for a company for a minute. You know, it was an opportunity for me to get in and learn from somebody for a minute and kind of start establishing connections and stuff like that. Outside of that, I mean, I think it's a little bit of a gut thing, and how much do you believe in yourself when you want to step out on your own, you know? I've signed artists that are very established when I've signed them, and I've signed artists who don't have anything going on when I sign them. And the ones that don't have anything going on, it's just of conviction within myself of I can make this happen. And I think some of it, like, I think oftentimes people are like, you know, why are you working with this project versus this project? And I know, you know, the label world and the management world, and it's kind of the same question. It's not always about the numbers, even though those are safety nets, of course. Mm-hmm. But to me, what I look for is understanding the project. I want a conviction of it in that I believe this will work. And two, I can see the finish line. There are a million talented people out there. There are a million people with huge numbers out there. But if I can't see the finish line, I'm not the right person for the project, right? You know? So I've really got to visualize, like, this is where I see this project ending up. And if that lines up with what the artist sees, we can kind of take things to the next step. But if it doesn't, it doesn't matter if I think it needs to go this way. If that's not where the artist is heading, then it's not going to work between you two. If the artist is talented as can be and has all the numbers in the world, but you don't understand where the artist is going, can't help that project either.
100%. So while I was in college, I met an artist that I started managing, and I had no knowledge of management whatsoever. It was kind of just learning as I go. We were both figuring it out together, and then we ended up moving to Nashville together. And that was kind of just like my foot in the door. When I shake hands, oh, what do you do? I manage this guy, you know, and they're usually like, who's that? You know, but I mean, that was what got me in and how I learned.
Yeah.
It was a lot of trial and error. But I think just the figuring it out and just kind of throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticked, that worked for me.
Did you feel that people were pretty receptive in town?
No.
No?
No, because if the artist that you're working with does not necessarily have huge numbers or doesn't look like they necessarily need a manager, then you're kind of just not really respected in the management sense.
Right.
But how I will say it did make me a lot of connections where I kind of got to like say, oh, I do this, I would love to meet with you for coffee and kind of learn from you.
Right.
And that's what kind of got me knowing as many people as I did back when I first moved here. And I think the management thing just kind of, I guess, just taking the risk. And I come from a business background. So I graduated with a degree in entrepreneurship, and you come from a business background. Like, I love building businesses too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think taking an artist from the ground up is kind of very similar to, because they are a business.
Yeah.
So it's the same of if you're building a company or you're building an artist from the ground up, the success when they get to the top is just like, all right, we did it.
And there's always another level to shoot for. You say, when it's taken seriously. And I guess that depends on who you're talking to, you know? I mean, at what level is it taken seriously? I've got what I consider a few successful clients, but, you know, there's a bunch of more successful artists out there. So
yeah,
always plenty motivation to go around in this town to get to that next level.
100%. The thing that does suck about it, the biggest downside is that if you are building an artist, say you sign an artist that isn't kind of, they don't have the biggest numbers, they don't have the biggest social following, if things don't work, you're the guy that it all falls down on. You know, and that was something I kind of experienced was, you know, I've worked with a ton of different artists that it just didn't work out. You know, like you said, I just wasn't the guy. It just,
yeah.
And, but certain things just didn't work the way I had thought they were gonna, or the artist thought they were gonna.
Sure.
And then it kind of gets thrown on the manager. Like, oh, that was supposed to be you that, you know?
Right.
And that was the hardest part that I faced.
Yeah.
Being an independent manager, because there was no other, it was just one man show.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just not the right fit between the client and the manager. You know, I've got buddies that still to this day are buddies that I managed for a minute and just had to have that talk of, I don't think this is right for yeah. you at the moment. You know, we just don't work right together.
Right.
Just as every person is not right for you as a spouse, you know, mm-hmm. like sometimes you find that right match and sometimes they're not the right match. And knowing when to turn that over to somebody else is also a key part of it. You know, you can't keep banging your head against the door. And at the end of the day, this is music business. You know,
yeah.
we're supposed to enjoy the people that we work with as well. And I genuinely can say that all four of my artists are people that I love working with.
Yeah.
You know,
and it is, you know, a lot of people, they get mad that us, like, as music business professionals, we care about the money and we care about the more business side of things. But, like, we're just people that love the music. And yeah. most people will tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, they call us the suits.
Right.
Are you a suit? No, you're not a suit. But they'll, like, say how much we only care about the money and
right.
and all that stuff. But it's just, like, we're so relationship motivated and music motivated, at least I am.
Yeah.
And that's been the biggest part of just my journey here in Nashville, is just loving the music, and everything else is just taking me.
Yeah, man. And you're not making any money without them making some money.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're all trying to build the same business.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, as long as you're all on the same page about everything with your artists and stuff, it's a good working relationship.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the Texas and Nashville scene. Because like I said before, the lines are kind of blurring.
Yeah, I
because
agree.
There was that big, like, Texas doesn't associate with Nashville and 100%. Vice versa. Now you're kind of getting where you have artists going back and forth. Cody Johnson signed to a Nashville label.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's your take on that, even though I didn't really ask a question?
Yeah, man. It's funny. I remember being that hardcore red dirt Texas loving kid and really being the person who did not consume Nashville country for a bit of my early, like, high school age and stuff like that. And when I met my now wife, you know, she was the direct opposite. She was Luke Bryan and Florida Georgia yep. Line only, and I was over country. Here. And it's kind of funny because now it's almost switched. Now I'm the one jamming C4th and she's listening to Coetzel, you know?
Yeah.
So we've almost flip-flopped in that aspect. But I do think it's blurred so much. It was a very defined line for a little while. And I don't really know why that was, if it was because the two genres were so narrow and now they're not, or what really broke down those boundaries. But people will reference Coetzel or Parker McCollum and call them Texas country, but they're national acts mm-hmm. now, you know.
Yeah, Co's signed out of Columbia, they're New York, and Parker signed out of I think Nashville.
Yeah, and same with Cody, you know? I mean, it's just music at this point.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of the younger Texas kids that are coming up and doing good and taking those same routes and breaking down those boundaries. Even I was with somebody at dinner the other day, and they said, there's this new band out of Texas called Whiskey Myers. It's like, they're not new, man. Yeah. They're not new. They've killed it the last few years, but they're not new. But the national audience is finding all of this music, and they're just assuming that it's country music or rock music or wherever you want to place it. But I think I have seen those barriers to entry come down drastically in the Texas market, because for a while Texas didn't want anything to do with what was coming out of here, and now it's kind of a fluid system more so than it used to be.
Would you say TikTok plays a role in that?
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if that audience is consuming both of those the same way and kind of adapting music through that. I think more so it's kind of the mindset of the music consumer. I mean, if I think about my dad and mom's generation, they would have a very clear answer of what type of music they like. I think if you ask me, I have no idea. I listen to all of it. And I think the younger generation than me is even more so. You know, like, they don't listen to rap. They listen to rap, rock, country, pop, jazz, whatever they want to listen to, you know? So I think even more so than one platform influencing everything, I think it's consumption as a whole and being exposed to so much different types of music.
Mm-hmm.
And not having to fit in one single box.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, streaming kind of plays a little bit into that. I think the accessibility of all of those different genres does play into it. Whereas with radio, there is not a... Have you checked out Spotify's genre lists lately?
Mm-mm.
It's about 800 genres long now. But it used to be country, rock, pop, right?
Yeah.
You listen to one of those things. Now you can go to
Americana,
Afro beats hip hop if you want, or you can go to like European jazz pop, you know, like you can get so niche. It's all out there. Just go check it all out, you know?
Yeah. Cause I mean, country has separated to that. I had a conversation about this today, actually. It was like country was just country.
Right.
Like you had Johnny Cash and George Jones and Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson. You had all this. Anybody asked, what genre is that? You say country.
Right.
But now you have country and it's like webbed out to like country rap, country rock,
right.
Americana, folk, like all these different. And it's like, how do you even classify these things?
Yes. Yeah. You were talking about that Hayfield band I just signed. I was with those guys and they said, when you pitched to Spotify, what'd you put us under?
Yeah.
I said, country rock and pop punk. It is all of those things, you know?
Yeah, and so I talked about Ryan Waters' band. Go listen to his catalog. It's like the most diverse thing ever. And he's a country band, but like his sound is very like pop punkish.
Yeah.
You know, and he signed over to Madden Co., which I think is a Good Charlotte, I think. Have you ever heard of them?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's their thing. So it's just like, that's just a country dude that signed over, and next thing you know, he's playing over there with Lil Wayne.
Heck yeah, man.
So it's just crazy how all that works, and Austin Snell's another example of that.
100%.
Hayden.
Yeah.
Hayden's a prime example of that, actually, is because if you go listen to his catalog and where he started and how it started to just kind of diversify into like the Good As It Gets,
right,
to like the Better Offs,
right,
to the Rock Bottom song. Like there's just so many, like you can go slow, you can go like hard rock. It's awesome to see, though. I love it.
And it's fun to see how some of those bits of success allows the artist to be a little bit more of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right? Everybody's a little bit self-conscious and trying to fit in some sort of box at the very beginning. And then at some point, they're just them.
Exactly. That's what, oh man, I love that you said that, because that's huge. It's people want to come to Nashville and say, I'm doing country music, and they try and fit in that country thing.
Right.
So sometimes they'll make their voice a little bit more twangy than they need to, or they'll have like the track will just sound a little bit more country than what their voice really is.
Right.
And then you let somebody just do what they want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you get the best music.
Why is it not working? Because there's already 500 of those out there.
Exactly. You know, you're trying to copy out, like, you get a lot of female artists right now that see, this works for Megan Maroney, I'm going to just do that.
Right.
And they're trying to sound like her. They're trying to look like her. And, I mean, you get it all the time. And it's just like, do whatever you want. Sound like whatever you want to sound like. Sing whatever you want to sing. It doesn't matter if she has all these upbeat songs or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, just once you find who you are and you allow yourself to be okay with being you, even if you don't blow up on TikTok, you know, like,
yeah,
things will happen.
When I love, like, when you find an artist that's convicted enough to be like, I'd rather fail being me than succeed being somebody else.
100%.
You know, like, you're an artist, right?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't wake up saying you want to be an artist so that you can go copy somebody else.
Yeah. Right? And imagine you do that. You be successful being somebody else, and then you are having to live like that for the rest of your life. You're having to put on that persona.
Yeah, man. I was at a festival this last weekend, and saw Chase Rice. And I think he's gone through some of those things where he talks openly about it on stage, which is the only reason I bring it up here, because I know he's putting it out there. But he's very open when he's on stage of like, hey, these next three songs that I'm going to play, I hate them. Like, they were huge smashes for me, but I hate them and they're not who I am. I'm going to play them because you like them, but then I'm going to play a bunch of stuff that I love that's me.
Yeah,
you know, and it's an interesting spot to be in, because, you know, even the amount of success that he had with those songs, you can tell that there's something inside him that's like, I've got to let people know that, like, while I appreciate them consuming this and making my career what I always dreamed it would be, I want this true, honest self to be seen more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why there's a lot of people on TikTok that, so that's a whole nother beast to talk about, but just people on TikTok love to find new talent of people being real.
Yeah.
If you're trying too hard on TikTok to be somebody you're not, you know, you're trying too hard with the content and just trying to put on this like persona, it doesn't work, because TikTok loves to find people that are themselves, and they love to blow you up.
Yeah.
I mean, look how many people it's happened with.
Yeah.
With, Zach Bryan being the prime example.
100%.
Someone that's just like came from nothing in the music world, TikTok just blew him up.
Yeah, 100%. It's a cool tool. It's a unexplainable tool. I won't pretend to, as much marketing as I've ever done, I won't pretend to understand why things do or do not work on TikTok.
Yeah.
Unknown world.
No, that's, I mean, I've had Mitch Wallace, who's sitting out there right now. I've had him on the podcast, and he's one of the most knowledgeable dudes I've ever met when it comes to marketing. And he has his ways of making it work, but at the end of the day, he still, there's like, it's so unpredictable.
Yeah.
It's the algorithm. It's its own beast.
Yeah. I was talking to some influencers the other day, and they said, man, I get hired to come all over the country and teach people how to do this thing and how to do social media and make TikTok successful. And then sometimes I can't get 500 views on my own videos. I don't even know what the hell I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. It's, no, they're, if somebody tells you they have it figured out when it comes to TikTok and Instagram Reels and all that, they're lying to you.
Yeah.
Because no matter what you do for a living, no matter what, how big of a record label you work at or how many marketing degrees you have, it's, nobody has it figured out.
No.
I don't even think people at TikTok have it figured out.
100%.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the independent, like, building from the ground up and social media, how big that's become for growing artists, is social media has been the name of the game.
Yeah, the past couple years. And I'm really convinced that this music scene is not so by chance or by luck as people set it up to believe it is. You know, I mean, how many artists have you heard that have grinded it out for 10 years and almost went home and didn't, and then the next one's the one that popped off? I think it's more of it's a consistency game. It's a quality game. It's staying committed more so than it is luck, you know?
Right.
If you've got a little bit of talent, you're being authentic, you're working at it really hard, and you have no backup plan and you're sticking it out here, you can get there.
Yeah.
You know, it, and the independent world has grown so much to the point where, like, it is predictable to grow a sustainable career as an independent artist, whether or not it is your goal to be a signed artist, or, you know, if your goal is to play 1500 cap theaters, or it's to tour 40,000 seat arenas. I think there are ways you can make it happen if you just put in the work and stay consistent and get out there and do you.
Yeah. And that's another thing when it comes to the touring and the shows and social media. You know, I've never seen, I've seen Dave Fenley. I've seen him play Writer's Rounds. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Yeah.
He puts on it's its own show there.
Yeah.
The beatbox and all the stuff that he does. It's incredible.
He can shut up a room.
Absolutely. I've never seen Lane, but I have seen, as you know, Hayden many times, full band.
Yeah.
And just to see the progression of the show, and I know a lot of that is songs, but before he really had, like, the social following that he does on both TikTok and Instagram, you know, he was out playing shows, as many shows as he could, wherever he could.
Right.
And he was kind of had the same band most of the time, just kind of building his show and getting comfortable on stage. And that's not something you see very often nowadays, I feel like. It's
an interesting point, because that's one of the key differences in between the Nashville scene and the Texas scene, is that is all you see in the Texas scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody who's doing quote unquote Texas country music is out there hitting the road Thursday through Sunday. And that's just what you grow up thinking that you're supposed to go do. And Nashville on the opposite side is write, record, put out music. And maybe the touring thing happens for artists and maybe it doesn't for others. Yes, Hayden did get out there and tour quite a bit early on. And I think it does teach you how to connect with an audience and a lot of really good things. Now, I think there's also a point where you need to get a little bit more selective with those gigs and actually start looking at opportunities. Are you growing your brand by this? And
Yeah. That
doesn't have to be financially. It doesn't have to be fan base, but there's got to be some benefit to your brand to go out there and use your talent
rather than just the payday.
Even that, sometimes, I mean, there are wildly outrageous quotes from corporate gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Go take your payday, you know?
Yeah.
There are ones that you go out and lose your butt on, you gain a ton of fans.
Right.
There are ones that, from a fan perception standpoint, this tour looks really good to go out on, so let's go do this because my fans will think it's cool, you know? Mm-hmm. All three of those things have a positive impact to your brand. If it doesn't have a positive impact to your brand, then what are you doing? You know.
And I remember when Hayden announced those Chase Matthew dates.
Right.
I mean, that's in itself is because they have such a very similar, from the outside kind of looking in, very similar target market.
Yeah, man. Those, they work really well together. They're buddies. Obviously, Chase put Hayden on the first single of his last album. So it works really well, but it is interesting when you get a pairing like that to see the conversion. You know, when he goes out with Chase, just those fans are fanatical about mm-hmm. Chase and therefore about Hayden and vice versa. You know, they really transfer easily.
Yeah. So that's awesome to see because, you know, opening slots, no matter who you are, typically don't have the biggest, especially when you're like traveling a ton, mm-hmm. don't have the biggest payout, if at all.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those things. It's like, this is a business decision. This is an investment.
Yeah.
You know, I might not be getting the biggest financial return, like I said, if at all, but I'm gaining fans.
And make sure you are on your A game with merch.
Yeah. You know, that's where you will make the payday.
100%. You pay that gas with the merch.
Yeah. So, I mean, just those little things and it's those opportunities that could really, so just seeing that and seeing the organic growth with him specifically has been incredible to watch. I can't stress it enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's cool seeing, you know, a goal like that. You know, Hayden wants to be a global stadium act. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned Dave Finley, who has an upcoming Chris Young single as a writer. He's touring, you know, 1500 seat theaters, and like, that's his horizon. That's, yep. that's where he's headed, you know? So we can do both of these things. And because myself and the artist is clear about what their goals are, we've been pretty effective about getting there, even though they're vastly different paths. You know, they're, the two artists couldn't be more different. One's rock and roll, the other one's singer songwriter, one's traveling solo acoustic, the other one's traveling with a 10-piece crew. Mm-hmm. But as long as we're all on the same page about where we're going, like, let's just put in the work and get there.
100%. So what is your advice to anyone listening that's trying to get in the music business? Because I've had so many people reach out to me, and I mean, there's so many things I could tell them, but networking has been a common theme. You know, yeah. People say get out and network, but what's your advice to anyone trying to get into the music business?
Man, I think being present here is important if it's going to be Nashville, you know. I don't think I would be as far along if I hadn't have physically put the time in here. It's easier said than done for some people, you know. It's obviously expensive to just pack up and move to Nashville when you're kind of starting off in this thing. But I think it's important to get immersed in this scene and kind of figure out how things work. And then secondly, I'd get very clear about what it is you want to do, you know, whether that's artist management or booking or publishing or getting on the label side, and then find somebody that can be your mentor, hop in under them and work your ass off, yeah. You know, same with booking shows. You want to hop on the bill with an artist that's where you want to go, right? You're not going to book a show with an artist that's not doing what you want to do, right. You know? So why not get in business with or learn from somebody who's doing what you want to do? You know, definitely my aspiration is to build a business like Scooter Braun, you know, with mm-hmm. artists across all genres and multiple companies and all that stuff. Like, so learn from whoever you want to be.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you're going to get shut down, right? Sometimes those people are not going to be open to letting you learn from them, but keep reaching out, stay a good person, let people know that you're here for the right reasons and that you're willing to work for it. And you're going to find more often than not, the door's going to open and you'll learn something.
Yeah. And that's great advice, especially coming from someone that didn't come from a Belmont or somewhere that has music business.
Right.
You know, Texas State. I mean, I went to Florida Gulf Coast. So it's like I had
no
music businesses. I just came to Nashville and kind of figured it out. And you doing the same to see where you're at now. It's cool. And I think that a lot of people will take something from listening to your story. And
well, and I think you've always been very good about this, but be humble, be a good dude. You know, you don't have to be the loudest person in the room. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the flashiest person in the room. Like, if people know you're a good dude and you're working hard, they're going to be more apt to help you.
Yeah. Word travels fast around here, 100%. Around Nashville. It's if you come to town and you're shaking hands and you're meeting with people, oh, I want to, this is what I'm looking at doing. I'd love to meet with you. And I mean, word travels fast that you're doing that.
Yeah.
So
people sniff out intentions.
Absolutely. So I think that's great advice. And, yeah.
we're done. We got cut off.
Sorry. I don't turn my ringer off because of work. Sorry. But yeah, so thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Glad we got to do this. I'll have to have you on the other side of the microphone at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
So cool, man.
Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Behind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast. We'll see you all next Tuesday for episode 21.